He has told many details of the present world, the Hitler's truth, the Second World War, and the New Age. And in fact, I hear, I've not read that, that he says in the next millennium, there's going to be, after 1,000 years, a new race itself. So they also speak of a coming new species. So that's what Nostradamus has noted, and maybe others have noted. In fact, if you know Mother's story, Monsieur Théon, the occultist with whom Mother had learned occultism, he also predicted that there is going to be a race beyond man. So you see, those who could get onto that intuitive level can see. So it's not just we cannot say it's only Sri Aurobindo alone who has seen, but anyone who has the vision of that intuitive level, the Trikala Drishti, can see. But what is so unique about Sri Aurobindo then? If he also belongs to that Trikala Drishti, all Nostradamus also has seen, is Sri Aurobindo the same as Nostradamus? But the difference is there. With Sri Aurobindo, this Trikala Drishti was only one means, was only one level. In fact, as the mother would say, in fact she describes, once one achieves the supramental consciousness, one goes beyond this Trikala Drishti. What's the difference between Trikala Drishti and the supramental vision? It's just in the Trikala Drishti, there is a possibility of error. Because you still are human, your mind is only catching the truths now and then. Intuitively, you just catch one little slice of the future. If you ask Nostradamus what is going to happen on this day or this century, he will not give you the details. He can say, I can see these little incidents, but they could be erroneous also. But if one's consciousness goes into the supramental level, it is a higher consciousness than the intuitive level also. Because the highest that the Trikala Drishti goes is the intuitive level. But as we have seen, supermind is beyond the intuitive level. And Sri Aurobindo is one who stationed himself in the supramental consciousness. Therefore, his vision, as Mother beautifully explains here, she says, for him who has a supramental vision, all things and all truths are perceived and experienced as already present and known and immediately available by merely turning the inner light upon it, as when one turns the eye upon things in a room already known and familiar. This is a beautiful description. Just as Manakba would come into this room, he knows exactly where things are. He doesn't have to recollect, he doesn't have to think, hey, where was this thing? The room is so familiar to him because things are present for him. It's not that he has to strain his mind to say in the corner what was there. He can see the box there, he can see the photograph here, he can see the flower vase here, because things are existing for him. So for the supramental vision, things already exist. For Sri Aurobindo, the future and the present and the past are a continuity. For him, he doesn't have to say, hey, what's going to happen after 100 years? For him, is a thing existent. So when he says in this Savitri that I saw them, it's not something in the future. Just as he's seeing us sitting here, he's seeing them 100 years later or 500 years later existing. So for a supramental vision, things already exist as a continuum. There's no division between past, present and future. Just as if I look at this table, I see the table in one glance. I don't have to turn left and in the center and then right to see three different timings. I see a whole vision. So that is what is this supramental vision. Supramental time vision, we say. And in the supramental time vision, one can see the whole thing as one continuum. So Sri Aurobindo, unlike the others, had this as his basis. So that is why we can say that an individual, a yogi who attains to that status, what he sees as the future is not a future that is going to come, but a future that already exists. For human beings, it is going to come. But for Sri Aurobindo, it is an existent reality, existent truth. That's why, although all the great Alvin Tofflers and writers and Nostradamus, they have told us what is going to come, but what Sri Aurobindo says is an absolute truth because it is already existing for him. So this is the basis of his vision of the future. He is not a poet poetizing about the future. He is a poet who has put into Savitri only what he is seeing. In fact, he says in one place, thus we have described in brief the, here in a letter he writes that all that he wrote in the Life Divine is a thing that he has experienced. In a letter to a disciple, Sri Aurobindo clarifies, I had only to write down in the terms of the intellect all that I had observed and come to know in practicing yoga daily, and the philosophy was there automatically. This was regarding the Life Divine. And even this terms of the intellect is not fundamentally an expression of idea arrived at by speculative thinking. One has to arrive at spiritual knowledge through experience. So all that Sri Aurobindo has said ever in his letters, in poetry, in his writing, is not a speculation, is not an imagination. It's a pure experience which, for the sake of humanity, he puts into intellectual language. Thus, it is quite a misnomer to say Sri Aurobindo's vision of the future. It is rather to say Sri Aurobindo's experience of the future. He does not just envision the future. He sees it. He lives it. The mother in one of her messages declares, Sri Aurobindo belongs to the future. He is the messenger of the future. And this future is, as clarified by her, Sri Aurobindo is an emanation of the Supreme who came on earth to announce the manifestation of a new race and a new world, the supramental. So if you want to know anything in one sentence about Sri Aurobindo, this is it. She says he is an emanation of the Supreme. And Indian terminology, emanation, is an avatar. He is an emanation of the Supreme who came on earth to announce the manifestation of a new race. So it's not that he was interested only in repairing or trying to make man better. He says, for that, there are so many vibhutis, so many great people, so many great poets, let them do the work. But somebody has to pioneer the new race. And that was done by Sri Aurobindo. There's so many gurus who are telling mankind to be better men. But Sri Aurobindo did not say, you be better men. He said, you become the new men. The new mankind, you participate in that. He has announced not only the coming of the next species beyond man, but he had announced about India's freedom long before it was even conceptually possible. He had seen the end of communism right in its inception. Even when the colonial power was strongest, he had foretold about a world unity. As a step towards this psychological oneness of humankind, we see emerging trends of galloping globalism in the form of global commerce, total interdependence of the nations in the fields of communication, raw materials, energy products, etc. So Sri Aurobindo has not only revealed to us the beauty of the future that must be realized, but it still shows us the way to follow in order to hasten the manifestation of the glorious future fashioned by the divine will. Well, here is the second point I would like you to bring to your notice. You see, one can give a vision of the future, what it will be. Maybe some people, like as I told you, Nostradamus, and there are many people who can say what is going to come. But there's hardly anyone who has hastened its coming. And this is again unique of Sri Aurobindo. Many people may say, oh, in the future this is what man will be, because they can see the trends. But nobody has hastened and worked for the coming of the future into the present. And especially if it's the coming of a new race, well, no one has ever mentioned about the coming of a new race. Even if Monsieur Theon, as I told you, has mentioned, Nostradamus has mentioned, but none of them ever worked towards bringing and hastening that future into the present. Well, you may ask, why hasten? If it's going to come after 500 years, after 1,000 years, let it come. Why should we work for it? Well, here, they have made it amply clear that if the new race is not hastened in its manifestation, the old race, the human race, so-called present world, itself may not exist. Because the way we are going in a suicidal march, he says, we may blow up ourselves if the new race is not hastened. Because if the new race is hastened, then that is the sure guarantee that not only the old humanity exists, but the world will continue to evolve. So this way, he saw the urgent necessity of hastening. And hastening means bringing it forward. Sort of, you know, you play on your recorder fast forward. Sri Aurobindo made that FF sign. And that fast forward was to bring the supramental force. And if there is an occasion, we'll tell later, but I'll mention in brief. And this hastening, the greatest thing that he did for this hastening was to sacrifice his own body, which was again an immense holocaust. That he said, if I do not leave my body, I cannot bring the supermind. Because for the coming of the supramental consciousness, it required a human body, the first contact point, as we say. Just as in our mythology we know, for this Ganges to come down, it required the head of Shiva. It required some contact point. Otherwise, the earth would have been demolished. That is what mythology says. So Ganges first entered the head, on the head of Shiva. And Shiva absorbs the shock of the great descent of a new force. So that is mythological. But here, in the spiritual level, Sri Aurobindo's body was that head of Shiva, which absorbed the shock of the supermind. Otherwise, he says, earth could not have borne the tremendous shock of the great power. Because he is hastening it. Had he not hastened it, Superman came after 1,000 years when mankind will be there or not, then no sacrifice would have been necessary. It would have come in the normal course of evolution. But as Sri Aurobindo wanted to hasten it, he has sacrificed his own body. It's not that he died at that age. He could have lengthened his life as long as he wanted. But he said, no, for the sake of humanity, some sacrifice is necessary. So that is the details. If ever we come to have time, we will see. So that is what Sri Aurobindo is. And when we say he is the future, he has not only given us the vision of the future, but he has given the power that can bring the future into the present, and so that whole mankind can benefit. And that is why Sri Aurobindo is the avatar of the imminent and inevitable luminous next future. More than being a bridge between the past and the future, he is essentially the future in the present, or as the mother puts it in another place, Sri Aurobindo does not belong to the past nor to history. Sri Aurobindo is the future advancing towards its realization. So, all the philosophy of Sri Aurobindo, you may find lot of similarities with Vedas, Upanishads, when we see the synthesis, when we see his philosophy. Maybe you can even say 70% of his philosophy is akin to Vedas and Upanishads and the Gita. But what is unique about Sri Aurobindo is his vision of this new man, of this new race, and his yoga, which brings that great power, the supramental power, which he brought unto himself, and he gives to mankind also. It is not his sole prerogative saying that I have brought and that's fine. He invites all those few elitists who want to try it out, saying, look, I have got the path here, I have tested it, I have walked on it, I have succeeded. If anyone wants to follow me, here you are. So this is how, here is a great divine personality who has not only promised a thing, who has not only visualized the future, but who has fulfilled it. And you may say, how is it fulfilled? Well, it's for time to show you. Because in one of our writings, the mother does explain that the supramental force is working, but it's not visible for us, for the common man, because its working is very silent, and the revolutions it's bringing about are not noticed by mankind, but a day will come when even the blind will be able to see that this is the work of the Superman. So that's why, in my mind, not only because I've been from the ashram, but even if I read all the other great luminaries of our own country, I mean, there are people, great giants like Sri Ramakrishna, Swami Vivekananda. In fact, Swami Vivekananda himself guided Sri Aurobindo in this venture. Still, I make a difference. That this, for me, although many people are called as the avatar of the age, in India we have got so many gurus who are even mentioned that they are the avatars, it's not a clash. The avatar does not require a label. What an avatar, what an individual requires, what a person like Sri Aurobindo requires, is he does his work. And even if, his mother says, even if humanity doesn't recognize an avatar, it doesn't matter. In fact, he is far away from recognition. He doesn't ever seek recognition. What he does for humanity. Not for his name, not for his egoistic terms that people should do puja for me, nothing. He says, my work is to uplift humanity. And it may take centuries for humanity to recognize. But there are other people who temporarily may call their gurus avatars. It is good because that is the devotion of the bhaktas. But an avatar is recognized. Even Sri Krishna perhaps was never recognized in his own age, except for the great vision of Arjuna. Even Arjuna called him a friend. How many people recognize Sri Krishna as avatar in his own lifetime? So it is a new consciousness is not immediately recognized. It takes time for mankind to recognize. So for me, He is the avatar of the future. Why the future? Because he is bringing the next evolution. So that is where we call him Sri Aurobindo as the future, because he is the future, and as the mother puts it, advancing towards its realization, not just given a beautiful image and left it at that. Right? Yeah, I think that takes me my correct time. Well, if you have any direct questions or any clarifications, I still have 10 minutes. I welcome any clarifications. Yeah.
In the Gita, Arjuna asks Krishna, who is the man of perfection? How does he sit? How does he act? And in chapter 2, Gita, Krishna glorifies this man of perfection. Other great gurus such as Swami Chinmayananda, Sri Ramana Maharshi have glorified this man of perfection. And we find him in the Upanishads and the Vedas from the start. They all say that this man, woman, whoever, lives in Brahman, lives in, as you say, in a psychic being or so on. As you describe this race of the future, seems like still to me is a race of people who are like self-realized masters. I still don't see the difference between the past and the future.
Yeah, I get your point. You see, for this, you simply understand one analogy I give you. Say, can 100 brilliant professors become an Einstein? If you put together all the scientific people together. Because Einstein's genius is quite different. But I'll take you backwards. Can 100 or 1,000 most brilliant chimpanzees become a man, even the dullest man? They cannot. You can take the best of the chimpanzees, most intelligent, they might have gone to the moon 10 times or Jupiter 5 times. But can you call this chimpanzee a man? You cannot. Similarly, the best of human beings, he must have been psychically perfected, the human being might have contacted his psychic being, he may be a great saint, a great yogi, but still he is not the new man. So he is a species apart. It is not an extension of the best humanity. Like this is what Nietzsche had said. Nietzsche in his concept of Superman, in fact you know that, he has said that the best of human being is a Superman. He had compared that a Superman is a combination of Christ and Caesar. Because he has taken the best elements of devotion, of greatness, of spiritual genius from Christ, and of the human genius in Caesar, he combined and says, if a man has these two, he is my Superman. But he is still a man who is at his height of his ego, height of his capacities, height of its of success, or his multiplicity of personality. But Sri Aurobindo, it is a species apart. There is no question of a best of yogis even. Even Swami Vivekananda is not a new race man. Because I'm quoting him, because he's supposed to be the greatest spiritual living giant, I mean, who has roamed around the world, shaking the world. So I'm giving the extreme example that even he cannot be called a man of new race. So a new race is a species beyond man. Right? So let's not compare even what the Gita says of the perfected man or Swami Chinmayananda, whatever they have said. It's all on the level of humanity. But imagine chimpanzee, man, Superman. There are three different rungs in evolution. So there's no question of ever comparing the best of man with a new race man. One of the features I've given you that. But there's a question of body transformation, there's a question of mind transformation. What it means is much more. So one of the characteristics I told you to understand, I said he is centrally psychically based, but he doesn't have anything in common with the human species. I mean, the characteristics are there, psychic being is there because there is a divine aspect, but his body and my body, even Swami Ramakrishna's body will not be the same as the new race man. I mean, Ramakrishna is one of the greatest avatars, but his body, even Sri Aurobindo's body is not that of the new race man. So you see, this body is born out of human beings. And the new race man, his very process of birth is different. So you see, there's other differences that are coming in now. So we cannot compare this with that. It's a species apart.
I think about the races, at the moment we are in the fifth sub-race of the fifth root, main root. And the symptoms of the sixth sub-race have started coming up in Australia and California. That I understand. It may take years, but it has already started. I don't know how far it is true.
No, but what are the symptoms?
This new race is coming up, six sub-root race. At that time, the people will be so honest, no jealousy, and there will be no courts also. At the moment, we require courts of justice. There will be no courts in future.
Yeah, I mean, those are again, as I told you, all, they are the better human societies, but it has nothing to do with the new race. Just as I was telling you again and again, that human beings may be at that perfection. I mean, it may be that they have no courts, no anger, no jealousies, but still, it is the best of human beings, but not the new race at all. It is a difference of species, you see. You understand that single word is the difference of species, is not the difference of better and worse human beings.
Can we have a look at that for a second? At the time that Sri Aurobindo was growing up here, away from all the home influence, so there were two predominant things at that time. One would have been the church, that the world was created in 7 days, and so on, and man is as he is, and that's it. Okay? The other one would have been Charles Darwin.
Tavan, yeah.
Now these two, science and religion, have taken divorce on the grounds of incompatibility.
Mm.
Right? They're incompatible. They can't both be right.
Right.
They can't both be right. Either man has evolved as a species, or he was created in, 7 days. They can't both be right.
Mm.
So, what's happened? They're both sort of rejected in a way.
Yeah.
Because on the one hand, we say, well, we are as we are, we can't change. On the other hand, we have rejected the religion which says we can't change. So in a sense, we have thrown the baby out with the bathwater. I'm coming to the point. In
yeah.
A second.
Yeah.
All right. I'm just talking about the influences at the time of Sri Aurobindo's upbringing.
Yeah.
For how many thousands of years people had watched kettles boiling before somebody thought of harnessing steam? And when that first steam engine came, people thought that human bodies would not be able to stand that ride, faster than a horse. They thought the human body would collapse because that speed, of the train, even though it was a little bit faster than a horse. So, what are our conceptions? They are all based on what? Something we don't know.
Yeah.
Something we don't know. Things that we thought were impossible, like riding on a steam train and all that.
Right. They become possible.
They become that, yes. Right. So, just by extension of your argument, or your, not argument, but your development of your understanding of Sri Aurobindo's thought.
Yeah.
What you say is perfectly logical, that there should be a further development of our species as every other species.
Mm-hmm.
It's a perfect logic.
Right.
And that those things that happened in the past, or even are happening now, that we thought were impossible, only, a few years ago, like going to the moon and all this, they are now yesterday.
Yes.
They are now history.
Mm.
So we are history.
Yes.
We are already history, what we are now.
True.
The only thing I remember of that religion I was brought up with, that Sri Aurobindo was also force-fed, what else did he have?
Yeah.
Was that we should pray for the kingdom of heaven on earth. And that is the thing that none of us believed that it was possible.
Mm.
And that's why I find your talk very, very helpful. It's very logical. It's the only thing that makes any sense.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Would the new rest be entirely different, Maharaj?
It will be, the source will be, to begin with, I'm saying, biologically, it will be completely different, but the only common feature would be the form of man. The human form is what the new race will retain, but otherwise nothing of man. The source will not be man, there won't be, I'm reserving all this description for my last talks at the Mother's Manifest Physical Transformation, where you'll get more answers. But in short, yes, biologically they are different. But one thing maybe I should add to Don's argument, what is noted. You see, between that new race, what I call biologically completely different, and the present you and me, there would be stages of in between races. So it's not that we are human beings at this level and cut off and plop comes a new race. No. There would be stages of approaching. And at a point, it will be a new race. Just as in the evolution of the animal kingdom also, there have been dinosaurs and all those and the chimpanzee and all that. When it came to chimpanzee level, there was a sudden break and man came. So there would be an approachment towards the new. In the old biological human being. But he will not jump into that. Then that will come from that side. Just as even man seems he has come that way only. It's not that chimpanzee has evolved into man. That's why I feel a lot of these arguments are the missing skull. That is the missing skull, because Mother explains you can never find that missing skull. Because after an approachment, suddenly man descends. And so there is a narrow gap between the two species. Similarly, man would go up to a certain point, then there would be a new race. So this transition would be some intermediary races are there. So she does explain about that.
When I understand with the new subject is biological, when with each new race or sub-race, there is an additional organ at the moment in the fifth sub-race, there are five senses. In the sixth sense, there will be six sense, which will be intuition, as you say, and it will be perfect, near going to the perfection. And there will be seventh, will be seventh senses, and there will be completely new race after that. Sixth race, mainly. And we are here, in this country, we are thrown up, not... There is some purpose behind it, why we have come here. Economically, we are here, that is apparent. Everybody knows that, but these Europeans, we are under the fifth sub-race, and we have to cooperate, though there are differences. There will be conflict, but something good will come out of it. And there is a purpose we are sent, I understand.
Yeah, all this is experiments on this level, but it has nothing to do with the other species that is coming or what Sri Aurobindo sees. Yeah, on this level maybe we'll have many more combinations, many more 7th and 8th and 10th stages maybe, but it's a different vision altogether. Mm.